Hello and welcome to episode 79 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
As ever, you can find the show and its notes over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk, where you can also comment and loads of stuff. You can tweet us at Nerds Podcast, plus you can find us on Facebook and Google Plus as Nerds Assemble Podcast. We're also still running our short episode sort of feedback survey thing. It's 5 questions. They're very short. We would appreciate the feedback. Links for that in the episode notes. But this episode, what's happening, Paul?
Well, we're looking at Square Enix looking for fan views on the Kingdom Hearts series. We've got Sin City, A Dame to Kill For trailer has been released. Details for Batman Arkham Knight drop. Zack Snyder's been busy defending Watchmen. And, for our feature, we've got When the Geek Community Hurts Itself, the case of Jonathan Ross and the Hugos.
But first up, Square Enix is currently looking for feedback on the Kingdom Hearts series. For those of you who are listening to this episode this week, you have until March the 14th to give back some thoughts, views on this. It was a bit long, the Survey Monkey survey that they had for the whole thing. I went through the whole thing. I'm very dedicated Kingdom Hearts fan, maybe not as much as Paul. And
I have to admit, I don't think that you are as dedicated as you claim.
No, that's only because I got put off playing the handheld games after...
3, 5, 8 over 6 days or whatever it is.
Yeah, that thing.
Yeah.
That annoying thing. But no, there's a very in-depth survey, and it's probably, if you're a fan of the series and you've wanted the opportunity to say something about it, because there is a box at the end, it's like, if you've got any further comments, blah, in which you could probably vent any anger you've had over the series or things you've actually really enjoyed and you want to big up, now's the time to do it. I may have used that box as an opportunity or a similar box somewhere earlier in the survey to say that I would like them to stop having like almost all female characters who are victims. I don't know if that'll happen in like the third game when they finally get around to it, but a person can hope and dream. They can really hope and dream.
Well, I mean, they've got a whole host of Final Fantasy characters, so it's...
Yeah, but it's the fact that obviously, somebody like Yuffie doesn't like really get to play alongside you. It's the fact that either as playable characters or as the majority of main female characters, bad things tend to happen to them. Not nice things.
Well, I'm kind of hoping that Kyra will be playable. And there is Aqua, but obviously that's just Birth by Sleep. And even then, she doesn't get fridged per se. But yeah, I won't go into that.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I'm not surprised. I looked at some comment thread somewhere about this survey. I think it might have been on Joystick where I first read about it. I think someone said that they'd kind of left a note asking them to stop publishing everything across so many different formats because it's a bit ridiculous. Like, if you think about it, since the series started on,
PS2.
PS2.
Yep.
It's been on...
Game Boy Advance.
Game Boy Advance. Mobile.
PS. Yeah, Nintendo 3DS.
3DS. PSP. And obviously the PS2... And with the that's at least 5 different ways of playing the games. Well, 5 different consoles, essentially, in some way or form.
Did you include the 3DS?
Yeah, I included 3DS.
Okay.
In order to play, the original games, not the remixes. 5. Mind you, the mobile, Recoded didn't come out in America or Europe, it was Japan only, because it was it was a feature phone game, and obviously feature phones has it recoded?
Recoded. It has been since released on the DS, I believe.
Yes.
Okay, that brings up the, is that 6?
No, because you're counting 358 by 6 days.
Okay, that's the S. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so
it's still there. Is that the name?
Yeah.
It's something.
Jesus Christ.
Stupid.
It's
yeah.
an area code.
It has always annoyed me how many different platforms the series has been on. It's kind of ridiculous. I think that's why it's so hard to follow for a lot of people, because it's like, well, I don't own all those things.
Well, I mean, to be fair, what with the Kingdom Hearts Remix 1.5 and 2.5 Remix, they are, you know, kind of bringing all the games together onto the PS3.
But how many years has this taken? How many long years? Yeah. Many long years. And they were asking questions about 2.5 Remix, actually. Like, what kind of special bits and pieces you'd like if it was a limited edition. And there was obviously general market questions about which games that are kind of big that you've previously played out of, and which genres you like, and which is your favourite genre, and oh, what games in the following year or so are you probably going to buy. Yeah. There was only like three genres on their genre list I liked. And I think that was like RPG, Western RPG, action RPG, and Japanese RPG. The rest of the list didn't look too appetizing.
It's a pachinko game.
Dance. Anything with Kinect.
Oh, Jesus.
But anyway, if you are a fan of the Kingdom Hearts series and you've listened to this podcast in time, I mean, we did put this on our social media yesterday, but yeah.
It's definitely worthwhile getting your say in, to be fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's not very often that you can do that.
No, it's not very often they do stuff like that, really. Doing any across any of the developers, as far as I'm aware.
I think we should move on, though. we want to talk to you guys, or talk with ourselves, in amongst ourselves, about Sin City are doomed to kill for, but first...
Yeah.
Yes.
Here's the trailer.
Just another Saturday night.
Power is a fragile thing.
It's tearing me up how much I love you.
Dwight, is that you?
And what I gotta do.
She owns me.
She was an angel.
When she wishes it, we die.
One of these days she'll pull the trigger.
It's a good game.
UP Basketball! Basketball!
That there is a dame to kill for.
Sin City's where you go in with your eyes open. Or you don't come out at all.
And now that you've, you know, listened, I mean, we're linking to the, you know, actual trailer in the show notes as well, but now that you've listened to it, 9 years, people.
But it looks bloody good. Looks bloody good.
It does. I couldn't help watching it a few times because I am a fan of the original, and thinking, "Ooh, yeah, it does look nice." And it's nice to see so many people returning as well.
Yes, definitely.
I'm still not entirely sure of what the storyline's meant to be because I've never actually read any of the comics that it's based on.
Well, fortunately, all the comic stories were written before Frank Miller went mental.
Is this what we're describing it as? Mental.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think I'm being polite with that as well, because I could go into all kinds of descriptions of why he's just, yeah, it's like oh dear, but it's like yeah, he's gone off the deep end with I think he's probably living in a bunker somewhere.
Yeah, what I find interesting, he's obviously worked on the screenplay for this sequel, and I'm wondering where his input happened, and he kind of was perhaps, I get the feeling he might have been less involved, you know, towards the end of its long gestation as a project.
Yeah.
Maybe that's probably just my feeling, but might be the case. But Rodriguez is the director on it again.
Yay.
Is it again? Or am I misremembering? It's been so
long. No, I think he did the first one.
I think he did, yeah.
That's cool. Well, I was reading someone complaining that, you see, we wouldn't have saying like, oh, we wouldn't have had to wait for 9 years of Rodriguez having been off making all those Spy Kid films and like the Machete films and stuff.
I was like,
why are you being horrible about Machete?
Machete.
Ah, oh, great bit of, you know, kind of exploitation film.
Spy Kids was ace to keep my kids quiet.
Which was worth it, just by itself.
It kept me quiet as well, to be fair.
I tried watching one of the Spy Kids films once.
Why?
And I had to give up.
It wasn't that bad, was it? I'm going to have to review these again.
I was just... I think there's better kids' films out there. I really do.
The fact it's a kids' film would just put me completely off. It's like, nah. I hated kids' films when I was a kid.
Well, surely there's some that are actually quite good now. I mean, Wreck-It Ralph, Lego Movie.
Those are
again, I don't... Yeah, I count those more as family.
The thing is,
Transformers the movie from the 80s, there you go, there's a classic.
The thing is that we're talking about a lot of animation here. I mean, the thing with Spy Kids, obviously, apart from all the gratuitous attempts at use of 3D and smell-o-vision, it's a live action film.
Yes. I've forgotten about that.
It's a live action feature, so I would say that kids live action features, let's just say that, I mean, because Super 8 wasn't as perhaps as kids friendly as the Goonies. Like, I think it had a slightly higher age rating, yet it did feel like it could have been this generation's, younger generation's Goonies.
I liked
it. It didn't take off as well as it could have done. There's not been, basically, there hasn't been a defining live action film for kids other than something that's been like an adaptation, like Harry Potter, for a while.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much it, isn't it?
There's pretty much the bars there, Harry Potter, and nothing's kind of managed to follow up since. Which is kind of bad.
True.
But we're not talking about Sin City here, so Sin City.
Looks awesome.
I'd like to see a crossover between Sin City and Harry Potter. That'd be interesting.
I think
one of the characters would just get shot or pushed off a building or Harry investigate. No.
Can you imagine that? Let's end this the way we started with machine guns. Yeah, baby. So,
I think it was interesting sort of seeing the newer cast members in the trailer, and of course you've got is it Joseph Gordon-Levitt? Is that his name?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
I got to say it right. Yay. And the fact that obviously in the 9 years he's kind of gone from being, oh, that guy off of Third Rock from the Sun, to something a bit more. And because if you think about it, since the first Sin City, we had Inception. This is how long this film has been in production.
Can I just say, right, to kind of get with the whole Sin City versus Harry Potter thing. Expelliarmus, motherfucker.
I don't think that's a thing, just to be honest.
It's not going
to
be a thing. I want to instigate the fan fiction rule, which is kind of like a variation of Rule 34.
How they play Quidditch, just knock each other off the brooms or something with machetes.
And shotguns.
Yeah.
Magnus too.
I can just see Harry's Quidditch team versus the girls in the red light district from the first one. It would be slaughter. Anyway, yeah. That's not something I expected to be talking about.
No, that's quite amusing.
I still think it'd be awesome.
You still think it'd be awesome?
Ball, you were saying about your fanfic.
My fanfic.
Slash fanfic. Oh, man.
I don't think I've ever really written a fanfic.
It's probably best never to start.
Don't
sully yourself.
I think you should, and then send it to us to review.
And if they could do Doctor Who crossing with Star Trek, then
so yeah, I know it's a massive leap.
That has been done.
Sorry,
has been done.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's like yeah, I appreciated the picture mostly because it had Amy Pond. But other than that, it's like yeah, that's good art. I'm never reading it.
I did.
Go back to Sin City. Yes. I'm perhaps looking forward to this film now far more that a teaser's been released because, you know, it was kind of like title, sequel, we knew that, and now it's kind of, it's feeling a bit more solid, it's feeling a bit more like it is actually finally going to happen. And I really did enjoy the first film.
First film was ace.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got issues from a representational point of view, but I can live with that due to its extremely stylistic stylings.
Yes. Yeah, I'd prefer putting that down to just the genre that he's riffing on.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about if he wrote it now. But yeah, you know, his older stuff, yeah, fine.
Yeah.
That's just the genre.
But it's...
Yeah, I am looking forward to it. And did anyone see The Spirit? Was it
yes.
The Spirit?
No. I haven't seen it.
The Spirit was with Alec Baldwin, wasn't it? Was it Alec Baldwin or William Baldwin, one of the two?
I'm not sure. It was an interesting film.
You're not thinking of The Shadow, are you?
No, it is The Spirit. The Spirit's an adaptation of another comic book of that era that happened in the last 5 years.
Yeah, no, it's just that I know, was it Alec Baldwin?
But the Baldwins get everywhere. It could have been the one that played, like, oh, what's his face?
What's his face?
I'm thinking of Chuck and X-Files, but no, that he couldn't have played
Adam
The Spirit.
Baldwin.
He couldn't have played The Spirit. He's got the wrong build. Where has he?
No, I've got it wrong. The Shadow was Alec Baldwin. The Spirit was, yeah, The Spirit I'd got confused with. And
okay.
Spirit, that was with Samuel L. Jackson as Octopus or something. Octopus.
Yeah, and it was a really strange...
Really strange, yeah.
Yeah, it was just I wasn't entirely sure what was what was going on with it as a film.
No,
and it was well. I'm kind of glad it exists, but I'd prefer another
Sin City.
I think I'm going to move on to another. If I just look at the outline again for a minute, we've got quite a bit of a comic book bias going on.
But it's kind of a darker comic book.
Yeah.
Type bias.
Anyway. The tons of Batman Arkham Knight stuff, news and trailers, and this has like dropped in the past couple of weeks, and so I thought we'd finally talk about it. Here's the trailer. Awesome. Here's the trailer.
Gotham, this is your only warning. Abandon the city, or I will unleash your greatest fears.
The last will and testament of the deceased, Thomas Wayne. In the event of my death, I hereby declare that all my worldly possessions pass to my son, Bruce Wayne. Bruce, I ask that you honor the Wayne family legacy and commit yourself to the improvement of Gotham City, its institutions, and its citizens. Please, be strong. You are young, but destined for great things. Make the most of your opportunities. Use them to give back to a city that has given us so much, to change the lives of millions of people. Do not be frivolous with this wealth. Please do not waste it all on fast cars and outrageous clothes and the pursuit of a destructive lifestyle. Invest in Gotham. Treat its people like family Watch over them and use this money to safeguard them from forces beyond their control. My deepest regret is I will not see you grow into the good man I know you will become. And finally, my son, I ask that you never abandon this city to fate. We have lived through dark days, and no doubt there are more to come. But it is the good and great men who stand up for Gotham when others turn and run. In death, I will love you forever. Your father, Thomas.
And now this is not the trailer, it's us. I don't know.
You get to drive the Batmobile. Yay!
Batman.
Apparently, Arkham Knight will have an Arkham City that is 5 times the size of Origins and City. And I'm just kind of like,
But you get to drive around the Batmobile to get from A to B, so it'll be fine.
You're the goddamn Batman in the goddamn Batmobile.
Yeah.
Unless, of course, they...
In goddamn Gotham.
Has Rocksteady got any previous experience with driving mechanics?
I don't know, but they didn't have previous with doing sort of, fighty, combat-y stuff and things like that, and they seem to have done that.
Driving can go really badly as, like, just an add-on to a game for doing a thing.
It's fine, it's Rocksteady.
Yes, yeah, that's pretty much my attitude. It's Rocksteady. I'm happy.
We're back.
They're doing another Arkham game. I'm happy.
As long as it's not as buggy as Origins.
It won't be because it's Rocksteady.
Yeah, that was Rocksteady. This is Rocksteady. It's fine.
Yeah. I gave up on Origins. Like, I completed the main story, and then I was just like, I really can't be bothered to play the multiplayer.
It's a pity that the studio that did Origins wasn't Bebop.
Aloobop.
Mm.
I think it's Bebop, isn't it? Or...
Yes. Teenage Mutant
Ninja Turtles. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
He was in the hard shell.
Now, how would you feel about Rocksteady doing a Turtles game?
That'd be ace.
Go on, just Rocksteady doing more games. That'd be ace. The comics would be great.
For the comics. Not the TV series.
I've only seen one episode of the new TV series in Nickelodeon.
Oh, what, of Turtles? Nah, it's rubbish now.
It's not bad.
Hey, what?
It's not bad. That's my glowing praise of it.
Which bloody episode? Which episode did you watch?
One where something happened.
Was this with April O'Neil as a teenager?
Yeah, that was just that's just not right. That would leave my teenage self very confused.
I think it's at this point that we need to remind ourselves to ignore the fact that there is a live-action Turtles movie in a degree of production at the moment.
Really?
There isn't. Rocksteady don't have anything whatsoever to do with that.
Exactly,
so
we should talk about Batman.
Main Baddie was actually a creation by rock steady this time around. Right. Hence the title like... Arkham Knight.
Arkham Knight.
I'm sorry, but Arkham Knight to me sounds like it should be a sort of Miami Vice game with lots of nightclubs.
There might be. Penguins, innit?
True. I mean, although that would be more like Arkham Knights, wouldn't it? Like, did anyone see Baywatch Knights? I think that's where I'm getting the link from.
Oh, no.
Why do you think the name means they'd have their own baddie when there's precedent for Batman having Knight associated with it?
Because I'm sure I read it somewhere.
And it's dark, so...
But Scarecrow's...
The Knights are dark.
Scarecrow's talking in the trailer.
Maybe should they call it Batman Darkham Knight?
I have to admit, this is perhaps the one game that might break me in wanting to pick up next... Well, new gen...
I'll be picking up a PS4 for it, definitely.
I will be getting it on PC because I can't be asked with the consoles at the minute.
That's the thing, is either I try and build a PC between now and then or get a console. I'm not sure which is most cost-effective at this point.
I was a bit gutted that they haven't announced it for the Wii U, though, considering they used the gamepad really well with Arkham City.
Mm.
That's because they've said it's only for next-generation machines.
Mm.
And I'm only partly trolling with that.
I'm a bit annoyed about it not being on Xbox 360 or PlayStation 3 because of the fact that it appears that it might be the last game in the series, and obviously the series kind of, you know, started on that, and they're not using any crazy new engines to make it.
I have had chats with sort of, more techie friends of mine, and they're raising... you know, question marks with that, because it's are they actually just, you know, turning on all the settings on the Unreal Engine, or are they actually ramping up to the next, you know, version of the Unreal Engine?
Mm.
And is that why they're saying, you know, the city's going to be bigger, because there's just going to be more going on? I mean...
I thought it was for the next gen, because I'm pretty sure I read it somewhere that they actually said that they... couldn't physically fit the game world onto the PS3 and 360 with the detail that they wanted it to have.
I mean, those machines, you know, they are very old hardware now. I mean, you know, end of 2005, end of 2006 for, you know, respectively 360 and PS3. And I mean, yeah, they've done very well in getting the stuff out of those machines that they have over the years, out of sheer necessity, just like, you know, with the PS2. Compare the stuff that came out at the start to the, you know, the final games which were coming out for it. But, yeah, I'm kind of glad that there are machines, you know, there are new machines now, and there are games coming out which are, you know, sorry, but we're having to leave, you know, those machines behind. It's like... Witcher 3 is coming out only on next gen.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. So, who knows?
That started on PC, so that's not quite the...
Yeah, that's a little bit more weird with its progression. But I'm kind of glad, because if you were trying to squeeze, you know, PC games into, you know, half a gig of RAM, you'd have to make some, you know, massive... Yeah.
I'm just thinking, which would be better value for me to do, is to get a new PC or to get a PS4?
Well, to be honest, I would wait until there's more games than just Batman.
Well, it's not just that, because there's the... What was the one with the year for a name?
Eight?
That's coming out.
Windows 98?
The game. Is it The Order?
Yes,
oh,
the
Order. 18
and 86.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, no, that's PS4 exclusive.
That looks good, though.
I like the look of that.
I think you'd probably get away with not doing massive PC upgrades for the time being and playing PC games.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to be... it's been a long time since I've upgraded my PC, so I'm going to be building a new PC.
Cool.
And it's almost no matter what I do with it, even without spending much, it's going to outclass the new consoles. It's just that's the nature of PC hardware. Unless I specifically went for crap, it would, you know, it's going to outclass them, and it's going to outpace them for a good few years. And the massive advantage being, I've got the previous Arkham games on Steam. I played them through first on 360, but I got them, you know, cheap on Steam. I played them on, you know, on PC, and any PC upgrades I put in are going to benefit those games as well if I choose to go back to them.
Yeah.
So it's there have to be a critical mass of exclusives, and so far, the next gen consoles are not providing that. Not when you can just turn things down a little bit and run them on PC.
Yeah.
Still. So you see, this is why I'm like, maybe I should invest in a PC instead. I'm gonna have to come to that.
Absolutely.
When I get there, I mean, because
that may be a topic for future.
Yeah.
Definitely. And can I just say that Kevin Conroy has confirmed that he's back as Batman.
Yes.
That's good. That's
definitely
good.
See, he didn't do the voice in
Origins, did he? No, he didn't. He thought he was because he said something. I remember publicly about it, and then you sort of, oh no, you're not. It's like, oh.
Which is really weird.
Well, it kind of made sense because the character in Origins was meant to be a lot younger.
Yeah. I mean, he wasn't too bad as him, to be fair.
Yeah, it was believable.
But he wasn't. He was no patch on Kevin Conroy. So, and here we go. I've got it. In it, Arkham Knight is revealed to be the name of a new supervillain created specifically for the game by comics writer Geoff Johns.
New supervillain.
Yeah.
Or it could really be Hush in disguise.
Which I'm still annoyed that I'm going, oh, right, is that a new one? He's like, no, he was in Arkham City. So, yeah, but that bloody mission would not trigger for me no matter what I did.
Was that on PC?
That was on PC and 360.
So the Hush one was?
The Hush
when you find the, the bodies.
Yes.
I think I got to the second body, if there is a second body, in an alleyway. And it's just, search in this area. Can I bollocks get it to actually trigger? So
I remember spending about a couple of nights trying to get it to trigger on that, and I ended up having to do something ridiculous like turning halfway towards east and rest and before it actually picked up anything.
I never had any problem quite like that doing that. It triggered for me straight away. That is weird. I want to move us on now to last bit of news the past week, where Mr. Zack Snyder's been having to defend his interpretation of Watchmen.
Why should he have to defend it?
This is after producer Joel Silver, you know, that guy that's helped bring us such classics as The Matrix and of action films over the
years. Did he have something to do with Batman and Robin?
Quite possibly.
Well, then he can't.
Yeah, he's...
Can he? So... suits.
But he said in an interview with Coming Soon that Snyder had been a slave to the material, referring obviously to the fact that actually, despite not having the Black Freighter bits in the movie and changing the ending and not having the paedophile connection with the original Night Owl, it was actually quite true to the comics.
Yes.
And so Silver, in this interview with Coming Soon, is like all about this kind of like version that Terry Gilliam and somebody else had cooked up before, obviously, Snyder got the job.
Mm.
I can't wait to see, or I can't wait to hear what you think of it, the idea.
And basically... how do I put this? I'm sorry, I'm having to get. I'm having to. Okay, so Coming Soon were like, and then the one that Zack Snyder made. Oh God, I mean, Zack came in it the right way, but was too much of a slave to material. This is in reference to the Gilliam thing, and then CS are like agreed, and then Silver says, "I was trying to get it back from the studio at that point because I ended up doing both V for Vendetta and Watchmen, and I kind of lost Watchmen. I was happy with the way V came out, but we took a lot of liberties. That's one of the reasons Alan Moore was so unpleasant to deal with. The version of Watchmen that Zack made, they really felt the notion. They went to Comic-Con, they announced it, the show things, the audience lost their minds, but it wasn't enough to get a movie that would have that success. What Terry had done, and it was a Sam Hamm script, who had written a script that everyone loved for the first Batman, And then he brought in a guy who worked for him to work on it, Charles McCone, owner, co-writer of Brazil. What he did was he told the story as is, but instead of the whole notion of the intergalactic thing, which was too hard and too silly, what he did was he maintained that the existence of Dr. Manhattan had changed the whole balance of the world economy, the world political structure. He felt that character really altered the way reality had been. He had the Ozymandias character convince essentially the Dr. Manhattan character to go back and stop himself from being created so there never would be a Dr. Manhattan character. He was the only character with real supernatural powers. He went back and prevented himself from being turned into Dr. Manhattan. And in the vortex that was created after after that occurred, these characters from Watchmen only became characters in a comic book, which Cumming soon replied, "That's fascinating, very meta." And so it was like, oh yeah, so the three characters, I think it was Rorschach, Night Owl, and Silk Spectre, they're all of the sudden in Times Square and there's a kid reading a comic book. They become like the people in Times Square dressing up like characters as opposed to really being those characters. There's a kid reading the comic book and he's like, "Hey, you're just like in my comic book." It's very smart, it was very articulate, and it really gave a very satisfying resolution to the story, but it just didn't happen. Lost the time.
Thank God.
And coming soon, but like, things happen for a reason. It might have changed the whole landscape of superhero movies right now as well. Silver replies, "But I did like the movie very much. Zach did great stuff in it." This is after giving this whole description of the Killam version of the film. Snyder's obviously got a response to this, which he put out. And he said, "If you read the Gilliam ending, it's completely insane," says Snyder. "The fans would have stormed the castle on that one. I would have not grabbed something from out of the air and said, 'Oh, here's a cool ending,' just because it's cool. Honestly, I made Watchmen for myself," continues the director. "It's probably my favourite movie that I've made, and I love the graphic novel, and I really love everything about the movie. I love the style. I just love the movie, and it was a labour of love, and I made it because I knew that the studio would have made the movie anyway, and they would have made it crazy. So finally I made it to save it from the Terry Gilliams of this world."
Yeah, I have to say, my reading of, you know, the Gilliam ending, I like Terry Gilliam, but if he was wanting to do that with a film of his own, great.
Yeah.
If you wanted to do that with Watchmen, piss off.
Do not
darken my door.
I really enjoyed Watchmen, to be fair.
Same.
And I will say now, I got it wrong. Joel Silver had nothing to do with Batman and Robin. However, he did have something to do with Dungeons and Dragons. So that's definitely.
So, yeah, he's on the list. He's on the list.
Yeah, someone who had I liked V for Vendetta, but it had issues.
I quite enjoyed V for Vendetta. As a stronger film, I preferred Watchmen. It was just a lot darker and grittier, which is what it was supposed to be.
Yeah, I really liked Watchmen. It is one of my favourite superhero
films.
Superhero air quotes.
I was happy with like the way they changed the ending for it with putting the blame on Manhattan rather than having Ozymandias working the entire time on like a random alien species when a weird, almost alien life form was already there living on the planet, which made far more sense.
Yeah.
But I mean, and I was happy with them not being the Black Freighter bits. That was fine.
Yeah.
Because I mean, they went and made a separate animation for it. I'm sure if you really wanted to, you could cut the film with like bits of Black Freighter in between if you were so desperate. But I think the only thing that disappointed me about the film was more how they missed out the reason, well, they changed the reason for when the original Night Owl gets like killed.
Mm.
Yeah.
They changed that. It was just like, I can't remember, what's the reasoning for him? Because in the comic it's because he's accused of being a paedophile when he's not.
Yeah.
Then the film, they changed it to something else and you just get slaughtered either way, but that was the only bit that kind of annoyed me, them sort of changing. So I really liked the film and it's one of my favourite comic book movies.
I have to say, it was, I never actually picked up the graphic novel until I watched the movie, and then I picked up the graphic novel and fell in love with the graphic novel, but without the movie I probably wouldn't have picked it up, to be honest.
It's one of those where I'm perfect, you know, there are some people who, you know, they changed the angle on that scene. How dare they? It's not that angle in the comic. Those bastards have ruined it. But I'm happy with things having differences, and I'm happy with things being, you know, their own thing. You know, so I'm happy with the film being slightly different to the comic.
I think part of the criticism that's loved at Watchmen, at least by the comics loving community, is that obviously because it's like they're angry with the changes they make, and they treat Alan Moore's work, especially his early stuff, as if it were sacrosanct.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, well, no, it's not. And he's not outright admitted it, but if you read across various interviews of his, he kind of admits that his early stuff, he probably could have done with a better, stronger editor who was ready to kind of say to him, that's bullshit, basically. And actually call him out on things like what happened with Watchmen in the original comic at the end.
Yeah.
But because he didn't have anyone to properly kind of shepherd him out of doing something like that, it happened.
Because it was only just comics anyway.
Yeah, and
who's going to bother? It's not as if they're going to be picked up for, you know, massive film adaptations in the future. That would be bad.
And obviously, you know, because he's got the kind of cult following that he's got these days, the way the fan community reacted to the... I've listened to people in person moan.
Yeah.
Angrily. So really just ranted about...
Can I just ask?
The ending.
Alan Moore, how did he feel about the Watchmen film?
Well, he's probably not watched it, as far as I can tell. He ignores all the adaptations. He doesn't like any of the adaptations and stuff, basically. He doesn't like having anything to do with them.
I think past experiences have probably burned him.
Yeah.
So it's just, I'm not gonna.
To be, I think the only one he should be really angry about is the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Mm. I was thinking that one.
Yeah, I think that's the one that he has any reason to be genuinely angry about, because not only was it obviously not at all the truthful adaptation of the comic, because they tried to make it a family movie.
I was going to say they missed a lot out of that, didn't they?
But also the fact it just doesn't work as a film. Like From Hell works as a film. V for Vendetta works as a film. Watchmen works as a film.
As
films, they work. But League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, it doesn't work.
I am aware that film exists, and that's...
Well, Paul and I, should we admit to a thing?
You own it on DVD.
No, it was the first film we watched together.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Nice one.
Yeah.
Is it well done on lasting this long?
Ouch.
That's fishy. Man.
I think that's a tribute to the two of you rather than that film.
To be fair, because that was kind of our first smooch as well, so maybe if the film would have been more interesting, then would have been less inclined to smooch.
So we might not be together now. So in a way, we should be thankful.
First film sitting down together, watch Blade Runner, the director's cut. The arguments would still be continuing.
Okay, I'm gonna move us on. Finally, you know, talking about angry fans and the fan community. Yes, the case of Jonathan Ross, the Hugos in the Nighttime. At least that's what it feels like it should be, as the feature title.
With a candlestick.
But so London Science Fiction Convention, that's meant to be happening this year, like the London Science Fiction Convention, not just any science fiction convention, he's going to be playing host. Is going to be playing host to the Hugos, and part of those organising the whole thing had decided to agree to have Jonathan Ross as the host. I think Neil Gaiman put him forward.
Cool.
That's what I heard, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, Ross, you know, agreed after being asked, and it was all looking like it was going to happen as a thing. And then they told, they announced the news, that the London Science Fiction, or Hugo Lott did over Twitter, and it all went to hell.
Why?
And it was very strange to watch.
It was... Do you know what? I don't think there's a sensible reason as to why it happened. I think a lot of people were very misguided in their assumptions about the character of Jonathan Ross. They also perhaps chose the wrong medium to vent their anger. And the conventional award organisers were perhaps incorrect and perhaps not approaching some of the other organisers who generally have a say in these things. Normally they ask the rest of the sort of top people who organise the whole thing whether or not they're okay.
Yeah,
and there's like a chance to veto whoever's asked to host the Hugos, which is one of the biggest, you know, science fiction. Do they do fantasy as well, or is it just science fiction under the Hugos? It's one of the biggest it's one of the biggest genre book awards anyway. You can win. Retroid, help me, because it's just such a mess.
It seemed to be that as soon as it was announced, there were some people who took exception to him because they seemed to think his humour was the sort of, you know, pointed at the victim humour, and, you know, let's mock people for appearance, or let's mock people because they're nerdy or whatever. And that's the bit that confused me the most, because he is a massive geeky nerd.
Yeah. I was going to say he's worked on comic books and all sorts, hasn't he?
I mean,
he has. It's been a he's been into, you know, games years. Yeah. You know, sci-fi, comics, you know, all of that kind of thing. I mean, if you watch, yeah, you know, all of that. Yeah, he is a massive man child in the best way. Mm. So,
I mean, there's you know, quite a few British comedians out there that, you know, you can imagine who basically just pick on somebody and, you know, take the piss out of them. But Jonathan Ross doesn't actually strike me as one of those comedians.
Well, no, because he's I've always seen him as like a retro said. He's basically into it just as much as everybody else. At the end of the day, I mean.
But this wasn't just the only things that were brought up, because other than his general attempts at stand-up, which have perhaps been abrasive at times, and obviously the whole thing that happened with him and Brand and a certain radio show and a certain phone call.
But that was ages ago.
Yeah, it was ages ago.
And as I'm always quick to point out, there were no complaints at the time. It was only when the Daily Mail
dragged it up
and presented it as a be outraged.
So not only was that brought up, though, that incident, but obviously one story that was published in the Mirror, like, years ago about something he may have done to his wife, but who's still happy, you know, with him, but however did have to close down her Twitter account after trying to defend Jonathan, I believe, during the whole thing. Like, basically, her Twitter account's gone now.
What would she know about her husband?
Yeah. So it's the fact that all this personal stuff and previous stuff got dragged out, and the fact that he has some of the best geek credentials, as I hate to think of them, that you can get from a celebrity. Like, he's got the card there with the stamp on it and the signature and the photo. It says, you know, geek credentials.
He doesn't have a CV. He has a CG.
Oh dear.
But you know, it's he's
under a legendary mount, level 80 battle mage.
But yeah, he's pretty. You know, he's written comics. You know, I've read these comics. When I hosted a graphic novel, Cornwall graphic novel group meet last year about his comics, he very kindly tweeted us saying that he was very, you know, happy to hear that we were discussing them and stuff. You know.
He pays attention.
Yeah.
He does, yeah. And his wife's written quite a few as well, hasn't she?
Yes, in fact, I believe she's either been nominated or has won Hugos in previous years.
And didn't she write some of the screenplay for X-Men First Class?
Yeah.
Yep. So to say that...
I heard a radio interview with her about it, and it's like, yeah.
Yeah. So And this, there was just, but the thing is, and this is where some of the articles I looked at about it, it looks like some of the dissenting voices weren't even Brits. They were just people who jumped on the minority, probably at the time, bandwagon, and just amplified this negativity around the entire decision.
It was a very complicated, because I was talking to, I follow someone on, you know, well, we follow each other, but, you know, she's into the, you know, the whole fandom and things like that. And she's from the States.
Yeah.
So, you know, I asked this person, you know, what's your take on this? And she said, well, so far as she was concerned, Ross was a good choice. Hmm. Just the wrong choice at this time, because several of the, you know, conventions, organizations, you know, that, you know, have had issues with some of their hosts, some of the people involved. In fact, one was, let's just say, accused of things with children.
Okay.
With, you know, one of the organizers of, you know, you know, a convention. So basically, there's this whole angry rigmarole with some, you know, several of the, you know, the scene conventions and the organizations with, you know, with people where they're desperately having to apologize to, you know, to people because there's been harassment at some of the conventions and they've not, you know, taken things seriously. They've had some of the, you know, aforementioned dodgy characters. And she seemed to think that the host had to be whiter than white this year, even if it meant, you know, someone in a, you know, very safe. Because the first moment, it looked like the organizers were backtracking and, you know, not taking, you know, absolutely everyone seriously, everyone, you know, who, you know, felt right or wrongly, that they weren't taking, you know, concerns about representation and, you know, the representation of, you know, women, minorities, you know, anything like that.
Hmm.
You know, absolutely 100% seriously, it was going to, you know, that's what the blow up was. It was less Ross and more of a, aren't you lot taking us seriously, that, you know, these things have to be cleaned up and, you know, please fix the problems you've had, take us seriously. If you've got someone who's a comedian who, let's face it, a lot of people, if they're not Brits, the only exposure they'll have had to Jonathan Ross will probably be his chat shows.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, he does get geeky on them sometimes. I remember one, didn't he interview Vin Diesel?
Yes.
And he talked to him about playing World of Warcraft. I remember, you know, seeing that. But if these, you know, conventions and organizations and gatherings and awards things have got, you know, a slightly, you know, muddied reputation, people just wanted to make sure that you weren't going to get someone who could crack, you know, maybe slightly off-color jokes on a chat show.
Yeah.
But then the thing is that that's completely ignoring Ross's
yes.
ability to he adjusts to the scenario he's yeah. in.
Yeah, I know. Well, he's not going to walk into an award show like this and just take the piss out of, oh, look at those people. Do you think any of them have ever met a girl? You know, kind of humor.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, humor, quote unquote, that you get with you know, people who aren't part of the scene.
I can only yeah. think if we were going, if they still wanted, you know, something who was like high profile to present something like that in this country. Now, I can't think of anyone who'd want to after the way that Ross was treated.
Yeah,
publicly on Twitter by all these people.
I felt sorry for Ross because I thought he was getting a lot of flack.
I mean, he started responding at one point, and that didn't go well.
But yeah, I saw some of his responses. I was talking, I actually pointed out to, you know, one of the people who was raising the fuss in the first place, that Ross is a massive fan of sci-fi and comics, and he has written them. And there, even, I mean, this person was, you know, being snowed under by, you know, people tweeting at them.
Hmm.
But the response seemed to say that, you know, seemed to suggest that they didn't know that he was a massive,
so this is an ignorant vocal minority.
Yeah, I mean, it
affecting the whole thing.
I think that, yeah, the best way to look at it is that people, you know, who had been pissed off with organizers, not necessarily of, you know, like the Hugos, but, you know, of, you know, conventions and the sort of fandom that was, you know, trying to cater to the, you know, the wider fandom.
Yeah.
They thought they weren't getting taken seriously and they were being pissed on. by people who didn't really care about them. And they got the wrong end of the stick. It's blowing up in the Hugo's face rather than Ross. Ross was just unfortunately the one that, you know, was there, and people got the wrong end of the stick, and then he just snowballed from there.
But the thing, I mean, it is a giant loss not having somebody like Jonathan host awards now, because he's such a prolific Twitter user and stuff. He's the kind of person that if he'd been tweeting about, oh, you know, I'm at the awards, blah, blah, and, you know, so-and-so got blah and Figgy got blah, he's the kind of person that could have risen the profile of sci-fi genre literature in this country beyond its current levels.
Yeah, but part of the problem is that the people that like to complain about it, you know, probably wouldn't like it to be raised.
Well, that's we can't
allow, you know,
thing,
just normal
yeah.
people in. Has to be for us ultra.
But it's not fair on the authors. They need somebody like Ross endorsing the material, because I mean, it's crazy. Like with certainly with genre specific awards, that when somebody wins something like, I know, like say the Philip K. Dick Award or something, they don't see a huge jump in sales because it's all very kept within the community, and the community's already read like the book, one would hope normally, but the community's still small in comparison to the wider population, and the poor author still doesn't see the benefit that the prestige given to the book offers, which it should in other places, you know, like regular book awards and that, like the Costa Book Awards or whatever. You'd see
it's a bit like if you win a, you know, a massive plaudit, a massive award, but you're in a locked room.
Yes.
It's like, oh, well, I am, you know, I am awesome, apparently, and people have said I am awesome, but no one out here knows. So what actual good has an award done if no one's actually going to pay, you know, any attention or notice it? Because when it was, you know, when it was all happening, I was watching it happen on Twitter, and I was confused as hell, because I saw people say, oh, you know, they could have got someone from within the community to host it. And I'm thinking, Ross is part of the community. You know, what are you lot going on about? Why I'm thinking he definitely is at the organisers, and, you know, the way, you know, things have been going the last
few years.
Sounds
like they haven't done their own work.
Well, I think part of the issue was not consulting with, because like a bunch of them essentially seem to make an executive decision without consulting with a bunch of the other sort of volunteers and stuff that work on the convention.
Yeah, probably because they were so pleased to get someone
so high profile
like Ross on board.
I mean, put it this way, because Neil Gaiman put him forward. I'm not sure if Neil Gaiman himself has hosted the Hugos before, but put it this way, if anyone thought of asking Gaiman now, since he's friends with Ross, to ever try it, and Gaiman's not going to do it now. Because he's like, well, you friggin', you know, absolutely slaughtered Ross for no reason.
No reason.
Yeah, I think it is unfortunate and very unfair on Ross. And it's not done anyone any favours.
No, it's going to take years for this to clear up. Nobody big profile who is whiter than white now will want to do it, because it'd be like, well, this is how you treat people who technically were worthwhile being put forward.
To be honest, I can't think of a name that's as big as Ross's that is whiter than white in the geek community.
I can just about be Dara Breen. But then he's he would do it, but
he's more science than science fiction though.
But he still has geek element, like he likes games and stuff. So he's still got the sort of connection. But put it this way, he wouldn't do it now after this.
I mean, no. Possibly Charlie Brooker?
Again,
but he's more sort of general geek rather than.
Yeah.
But then that's.
Yeah.
But that's
Charlie
fine.
Brooker's the type of person to actually, you know, take the piss out of, you know, the audience a bit.
But then at the same time, Brooker probably wouldn't do it now. After that, this is the thing. They seem to have just cooked up the kind of shitstorm that is going to hurt them for several years to come. Then they're going to find it difficult to get somebody who is a name and could help raise the profile of the whole thing.
Of course, because, I mean, they're going to just look at it and say, well, hang on, look at this outburst on Jonathan, do we want the same? Is it really worth our hassle?
Also, I think Ross is actually hosted, was it the Eagles?
I think he has, yeah.
Or one of the big comic book or book award things in America at Con. Mm. And it's like, well, which then is kind of bad because then that means that the American geek community that decided to get in on voicing their outcry over a thing that doesn't necessarily affect them that much, even though they literally did not know. And so basically, they shouldn't have listened to anyone who was on the wrong side of the pond, I think, in this entire thing. Because they clearly didn't know Ross.
Or they could have handled it better by going to him and saying, look, this is who you've picked, and this is why. He's done this, this, this for the community. He's done this, this, and this. And he's the perfect candidate.
I suppose because the original tweet didn't have anything like a press release or anything attached to it. And perhaps, you know, that like you're saying, that would have been the better approach. But, I mean, because one of the main dissenters about the whole thing, who I think is somebody who's sort of vaguely involved with the whole organisation of the London Science Fiction Convention, I believe it's just she, said, oh, she was afraid about having fat jokes said to her or something because of the chance of her being nominated for award and having to go up for stuff.
Yeah, which is, it's the kind of thing where I'm thinking, have you actually seen Ross work? He's not that kind of comic, really.
No.
It's not like they asked Jim Davidson to present the awards, which would never be a good
idea. I mean, I have seen occasions where they've had a comedian and, you know, they've invited them on and they've done the kind of jokes where it's just, you do know that the people that you're making the target of, you know, your jokes are your audience.
Thing is, though, I suppose, with Jim Davidson and that, he was a different generation as well. I don't think he'd probably do it as well as much now as like Roy Chubby Brown, for instance.
Oh gosh!
You know, if you went to him, but it's true. If you went to one of his shows, you expected to be heckled. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It was part of the humour back in the late 80s, early 90s. It was the humour.
By the same token, it depends on the way that it's done. Because I mean, someone like Jimmy Carr, for example. He would definitely take the piss out of geeks, but then he would also take the piss out of himself as well.
And perhaps in a far more devastating level than he's just done to the audience.
Absolutely. Some of the jokes that he does about himself could be quite, bad. Yeah, very dark, actually, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, and I'm just looking through, some of the, remarks I got with, over this.
Mm.
Shall I read some of them out?
Go for it.
Go for it.
Yeah, let's see. I don't blame Ross at all. It's an honour for him to be asked, and he didn't know what he was stepping into with his background when he said yes. The main issue is that many of the potential nominees didn't feel safe with him because of past remarks he might have made. So the award show would be kind of a mess if there had been a boycott of the expected nominees and winners, which is what seemed to be happening. What also changed this up was that LawnCon 3 spent years appealing to the community when they... that they would be different, a safe, inclusive Worldcon. Past Worldcons and related events have been hosted by men's rights activists and serial harassers. And by hosted, I mean chaired at an executive level. So for the chairs to apparently pull a fast one and get this guy, no matter how good he might be, without some PR work and reaching out to the fans and telling them about it, given his background, again, it sent an awful message to pretty much everyone.
Yeah,
I said it was badly handled by LonCon 3, and again, it would be great to see him host, just not this year, while these probs are being dealt with.
But then it's the fact that with his background, and it's like, what, the phone debacle and some random article in the Mirror?
It seemed to have been anything that could have been, dug up, because some people didn't trust the organisers. So some people went and dug up anything that they could have, and that created because they didn't trust the organisers to get.
But they were happy to trust what would have been essentially our equivalent of tabloid press about his character.
When people are annoyed,
they'll do anything to prove a point, I suppose, won't they?
If they got someone in and they said, no more arseholes this time. And then, you know, they got Ross in and, you know, people went and looked at what, you know, what he did, or, you know, some other people, you know, might have said, well, look what else he said in the past. Yeah. And he just seemed to confirm everything that they thought. It was just a stupid, horrible mess. And the end result being that they got one of the, you know, the best people to host this kind of thing and to help them with it chased out.
Yeah.
And it's, I understand why they thought that, but it would have been nice to have just, you know, had a bit of a sit down and look him up properly. Yeah.
I think perhaps, despite the outcry, that maybe the organisers of the convention should have stuck by their guns a bit more and done a proper... before, because it was kind of... the whole thing was happening over Twitter. And rather than taking to Twitter so much, perhaps have just gone, here's a, you know, a proper statement, references to all the stuff that shows that he's part of the community, including that lovely documentary he did about Steve Ditko. For pity's sake.
Because he has done some brilliant stuff.
You know.
Definitely.
You know, stuff like that. And just kind of go, look, you can, you're being, you know, and said, I'm sorry, community, you are being ridiculous, and this is why. I actually just stood by their guns, I think.
The main problem is that the most vocal people assume that most people are on their side. And it's like, no, if you're virulently, you know, saying, you know, giving an opinion that is incredibly strong, it's not that people agree with you. It's that people are afraid to actually, you know, speak out, you know, in case, disagree. You know, you basically target them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it would have been like an anonymous poll, shall we have Jonathan Ross hosting, yes or no? Then I think they could have, you know, actually asked the community themselves rather than just listening to a vocal minority.
Over Twitter.
It one of the great things about the modern internet and social media is that you can get fast interaction from people. But unfortunately, when you have so-called Twitter storms... you just get people who get very angry very quickly, and it balls over very quickly indeed.
Yeah.
And it would have been nice if it had been just announced and then given a bit of time.
Definitely.
And then people would, you know, would have been, you know, probably the same people, you know, would have reacted to it badly to start off with. And then hopefully the, you know, quieter, more reasonable voices would have won out.
Yeah.
And then the whole thing could have gone ahead and it would have been, oh, we were actually wrong.
But crazy.
Yeah. It is a pity.
It's a mess.
Because I know some of these, you know, things can have, you know, as I said, you know, badly chosen comedians. I mean, how many times over, you know, the last few years with games conventions and, you know, things like that.
Xbox One launch.
Yeah, yeah, over here. Yeah.
Where it's like, let's get someone in who's popular. Look what happens. So I understand that side. I understand, you know, I'm on Ross's side here. So I do think it's a massive pity, but it's not like, you know, some people just had a massive knee-jerk reaction and, you know, hated, you know, for no reason whatsoever. They had their reasons. They just chose the wrong target.
I think, to me, it also felt a bit too much like the community was being ridiculously paranoid over the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, I get that they're afraid and stuff of obviously having individuals who do not further a welcoming atmosphere in community. But it was just the jump in the gun without actually looking into the character of Ross properly. And...
Yeah.
Oh,
he is someone who's attracted tabloid ire. So I think that's part of the problem right there. People just looked for something, you know, and that was what they found. I mean, the tabloids are not going to be going on about, you know, excellent documentaries he's made on, as you know, as you said, Steve Ditko. You know, he's done Japanorama in the past. I watched that. He hosted, you know, the film review series on, you know, BBC.
before getting the boot due to the phone scandal. But yeah.
Yeah. It's like, ignore the phone scandal.
Yeah.
Please. Because there's so much more, which is, you know, yeah, that's why he would have been great.
Well, on that disappointing note, I believe that's all we've got time for this week. So it is goodbye from...
It's goodnight from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's goodnight from me, Paul, a.k.a. OneArmed_Cookie on Twitter, and you can find me lurking around thegamejar.com.
Okay, it's goodnight from me, Paul Blewett, and I'm on Twitter as Paul Blewett.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. You can find me on Twitter at EK6891. You can also visit my website at drowninginmultimedia.co.uk. You can find Nerd Assemble over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. We're also available on iTunes. You can find us on Twitter at Nerds Podcast, plus on Facebook and Google Plus as Nerds Assemble Podcast. And don't forget to check out the Hex Dimension at hexdimension.com.
What's with the funny voice?
I don't know. I feel like I'm channeling Myers doing Dr. Evil. Good night.
Night.
Frickin' lasers. Good night.